possible to make your stay memorable. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm informed that AVNOG and AFRINIC meetings are preceded by a week-long hands-on technical courses aimed at training participants from the African region on the ways of building scalable internet services and infrastructure. The workshops are recommendable as they complement government's efforts to improve the regional connectivity through developing the requisite technical capacity in the African region. It is through such public-private sector partnerships that Africa will develop and make its pride of place at the global arena. As we embrace ICT technologies and integrate into the global economy, our competitiveness as a region is challenged. Therefore, to effectively compete in the global economy, as a region, we need to develop human resource capacities through similar initiatives. In this regard, I'm pleased to note that the just concluded AFNOG workshop has trained over 65 participants from 17 nationalities across Africa. I also wish to take this opportunity to thank the instructors drawn from 11 countries globally who have volunteered their time to make the event a success. Another key consideration related to human capacity development is the research and development. Success is not only measured in our achievements, but also in our innovative abilities as a region, thereby improving our global competitiveness. I therefore call upon ICT's stakeholders to give special emphasis on research and development so as to give impetus to ongoing initiatives on bridging the digital divide. As a country, the government has put in place necessary mechanisms to address the problems of digital divide. While our experience with competition has indeed been very fruitful in the expansion of ICT infrastructure and services, the objective of overcoming the digital divide is yet to be realized. As a result, the government has, through the National ICT Policy Guidelines released in March 2006, made the requisite policy provisions in readiness to operationalizing the National Universal Access Plan. The implementation of the Universal Access Plan will improve access to communication services in underserved and unserved areas of the country and improve the socioeconomic conditions of the people living in the affected areas. I underline improvement of socioeconomic conditions here in view of the latest research findings that improving info density by 1% has the potential to boost GDP by 400%. Some of you probably have heard my comments about the strategies we are putting in place as a government. I'm very new in the ministry. We've been there for 5 months, but I've had clashes with many people because the things I used to see as a researcher, I now find that there are many, many things that ought to be done from the government side. Our strategy is to lower cost of access. And we have said several times, we must, through research and development, lower the cost of access of internet in this region. And as such, some of the strategies we put in place, especially in February this year when we had the outsourcing conference, is to lower the cost of hardware. We want our universities to start research by also enabling small enterprises to start assembling computers here. What it means for those who are not from this country, it would mean lowering the cost of a PC from $2,500 currently to $300. that would mean access. We have had two universities start doing that. Seke UART is already assembling some PCs. We are also trying to encourage the use of open source software. And in terms of internet, we are working so hard that we have fiber connectivity to East Africa. If you look at the connections worldwide, it is the only region that has no cable going through. And as a result, to get 1 gigabyte of bandwidth in this region, you pay more than $1,700 per month. Compare that with the United States, which gets at $20. So when we get promises from people that we would lower the cost by 100%, I laugh because it sounds big, but where the difference between 200 and 1700 could be, what, $2,000? So we need to lower the cost to below by 2,000% for us to provide bandwidth to Kenyans. Those are the things we've been fighting. I would not go into details. But the problems have been that in Africa, and I would say in Africa in general, we have a problem because any person that walks into my office now, I've got to go back and revise, think what he has said, because there is vested interest. Some they sound very good, but if you follow what they say, you find yourself far away from your objectives. And we need to talk about this seriously. Ladies and gentlemen, as you commence your deliberations, it is my request that considerations will be given to seek ways of addressing the issue of interconnection for African states through the existing exchange points. This will ensure there is low cost of access for internet content within the region. The success of interconnection for voice and data will spawn avenues for the development of African internet content necessary for the growth of e-commerce. It is through such initiatives that we hope Africa will be able to bridge the digital divide and enable us to compete in the global information-based economy. What my colleague didn't tell you, that in Kenya we have started to study the costs of interconnection, because we have so many players, and for them to compete effectively, we must lower the cost of interconnection. And very soon, the study is going to come out. We want to enable the interconnections come low, and through regional organizations like COMESA, like East African Community, we need to lower the regional interconnections, and maybe through AU, so that we can enable our brothers from the West Africa to be able to link with us in a much cheaper way. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenya recently marked 10 years of internet since the first online connection was realized in October 1994. As we took stock of our achievements in that sunrise period of Kenya, of the internet in Kenya, I wish to reaffirm Kenyan government commitment towards promoting the use of ICTs as an enabler of economic growth and development. In this regard, the ICT Bill 2006 will be tabled before Parliament soon, so that the national ICT policy may have the force of law. I was telling Victor Jalo, in 1993, I had just come back from the U.S., and through Shem Ochoth, we used to store and forward in a very crude way. That was the beginning of internet in this country. And because I used to work for a Fortune 500 company in the U.S., my boss wrote to me, could it be possible that you can be doing some of the work in Kenya? So I said, sure, and we have internet. So I decided to go to Telecom Kenya to ask them whether they can give me some link to my house so that I can do the work. I would have been the pioneer in outsourcing. But unfortunately, nobody in Telecom understood what I was saying. At Unasema, you do the work. What do you mean? And 10 years down the road, we had a conference on outsourcing. And I would confirm here that we have had so many Kenyans now in the outsourcing. And we hope to continue by lowering the cost and having more Kenyans do the work of outsourcing. And I'm sure, I don't know, some of you are visiting here for the first time, we have more than 100,000 college graduates working on the streets. We want to utilize them. We have the labor resources. We have the sun, which my colleague has said, it comes, by the way, whether it is rainy season or whatever, it would come. So we are committed to seeing that we get jobs to Kenyans, we utilize ICT for economic development, and you'll be hearing more from us in terms of changes. I was reading Newsweek last week where they said the changes that are going to happen in the next 10 years will be more than the changes that we've seen in the past century. So we must be ready for the dizzy ride. Some of us will be disappointed, start quarreling in the way, but that is the world. As I conclude, I wish you all fruitful deliberations and an enjoyable stay. It is my hope that you will spare some time to sample the rich cultural heritage and warm hospitality of the Kenyan people. For those who are here for the first time, Kenya is a choice for tourist destination that has a lot to offer in terms of both work and leisure. With those few remarks, I hereby declare the 7th AFNOG and the 4th AFRINIC meetings officially open. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bitangi. On behalf of AFNOG, I'd like to say we have one vested interest to make sure that engineer knows what you ask for next time you go in there. That's our only vested interest, and that's what we've been doing here for the last 7 days. So rest assured that it won't happen again. You mentioned a number of things which are quite interesting, and we hope on the bandwidth issue, I'm sure you'll bring some sanity in the discussions, and we'll get the connectivity that we hope. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to invite Mr. John Olubengo to give us our first presentation this morning. John's head of IT services at Kenya College of Communications and Technology. He holds a MSc in Strategic Business IT. He's also a Cisco certified engineer. And for some reason, unfortunately, he didn't attend our workshop. So, John, we expect to see you in the next one. But thank you very much.
Testing. I'm wondering how I'm going to do it. Thank you, Bwana Pius, and invited guests for being given this opportunity to present at AFNOG. I must admit that this is my first time at AFNOG, so when I asked Victor what kind of audience should I expect, he was not very clear until over the weekend I realized that I'm going to have to give a presentation to the likes of Randy Bush and Bill Woodpeck, amongst others. So it's really a humbling experience that I have to talk about networks to some of the people who actually designed or are involved in designing internet protocols, among others. I've already been introduced. I'm the head of IT services at KCCT. And KCCT is a telecommunication college which has about 2,000 students. It has three branches, two in Nairobi and one in Mombasa. What I want to do is to share basically the steps which we went through in trying to improve the internal network that KCCT has. So the presentation has about 15 slides, and the first one will look at how the position was in 2001. Then we'll look at the preferred status. We sat down and said that we're not happy with this position. Where should we be? We'll look at the design phase, the implementation phase, and currently what is happening. Oh, this technology is moving too fast. Okay, so in 2001, the position was that the college was moving away from a novel environment, and for the techies, that means that there was no need of having IP numbers. Okay, the protocol is IPX, SPX. It has nothing to do with IP. So when we moved from the novel environment into the Windows environment, there was a consultant who was actually doing the migration. And it turns out that this consultant really didn't know much, because what he did as far as IP numbering is concerned is to just crook up a number, 123, 123, 123, and move along the PCs, giving them one after the other. So that was the position. The IP numbering scheme was not planned. Secondly, the connectivity from one building to the other was also not planned. Like most organizations, the IT section or unit was growing up from the finance department. It really was about payroll. The IT department was payroll. So we had a small hub that connected about 8 computers, whose main role was to connect accountants who were dealing with payroll. But as the network was growing from the administration block towards now the other blocks, it was a matter of just pulling a cable from one hub to the other. So you ended up having a cascaded situation where you have the people at the farthest end of the links were getting a raw deal in terms of services. Secondly, there was a problem of server positioning. You would get servers positioned just across anywhere within that disorganized setup. At the same time, we had issues to do with dial-up. At that time, most of the heads of department were getting emails. So you'd get a situation where one manager has a dial-up connection to one ISP, and the next manager has a dial-up connection to another ISP. So the college had to deal with close to 4 ISPs who were invoicing the college every month for various services. We also didn't host our website. This was done by one of the four ISPs, and there was no corporate identity as far as email services were concerned. This diagram shows what I meant by cascading. At the top here, we had the finance department where the original network was growing from. So you'd get the network extending from one building in whichever way it deemed fit. At the bottom there, you can see internet. The internet bit was being pushed by the academia, the lecturers. So they were going up. The lecturers were pushing the internet requirement. So what happens is that the internet servers and routers were placed in the academic buildings, which you can see happens to be at the bottom of this hierarchy. And what that means is that the other people who wanted internet had to have their packets going all the way to the academic wing and then out to the ISP side. So this kind of situation was quite disorganized, and we felt that we need to redesign the whole thing. The typical problems we felt with the old setup was that the users closest to the servers were getting undue advantage. You find that your internet speeds are faster simply because you're physically next to the switch that is next to the list line. We also realized that there was a lot of congestion being introduced to the network because of the same disorganization. We saw that the switch fabric was heavily having hubs rather than switches. So this meant that if there's a problem in one segment, that problem could be shared across the whole network. So we sat down and said we need to redesign, and we decided that the design should be that we have just three layers, a core layer, a distribution layer, and an access layer. And we said that we need to move the internet connection point from where it was hiding at the bottom of the hierarchy to somewhere at the top. So this was the preferred design, with the internet at the top and the servers also at the top. Then we'll have distribution layers, and everybody should access those services on equal basis from the third layer. So you can imagine the kind of overhaul that needed to be done to move from that previous disorganized state to this preferred state that we had in mind. So the first thing that was done by the then director was to set up a technical steering committee to work out the modalities of making this migration. And once the committee was set up, we sat down and identified the tasks that needed to be done, and they're listed there. We needed to redesign the physical and logical layers. We needed to move away from the disorganized IP scheme. Remember, the earlier consultant had just typed the first server as 123.123.123.1. The next computer is 123.123.123.2, etc. So we needed to rework that. We also looked and said we needed to review the web services. We had a list line, courtesy of Kenneth, but we were still having our web services being hosted elsewhere. We saw that should not be the case. We worked out the migration plan, the timelines, and identified any competencies that we had or didn't have. We also gained high-level corporate support to see the process through. This is because later on you'll find a lot of resistance. For example, the academic people were not happy that the internet node, as it were, within the college was moving from their building back to the administration block. To them, they felt that that could be a loss of power or something. So you needed to have high-level administrative support to make such movements. At the implementation phase, we realized that according to our plan, we didn't have certain switches, the core and the distribution switches. But that didn't stop us. What we did is to identify the best three switches within our disorganized network and then move them up to fit into the design we had in mind. This would serve as a temporary situation until the college went through the procurement process of getting the proper switches. So that design still holds up to today. As the college continues to acquire the necessary equipment, we simply fit them into that three-layer design. Once we designed the IP scheme, we also decided to do the DHCP way. This is where the machine automatically allocates IPs to clients rather than manually moving across 300 PCs typing in numbers. We also created something called virtual networks to segment traffic from the student side and the staff side. We moved and repositioned the internet link and the servers within the college to fit into our three-layer design. We also decided to locally host our domain, DNS services, web, mail, and proxy services. We are continuing to monitor the network, and we use a lot of the open source solutions, some of which I've listed here. The Squid proxy together with the Squid Guard enables us to control what students can download or which websites they can access. It makes us control pornography. We've got a product called Mail Scanner, which gives us reports on how many emails are going out, coming in, which ones are viruses, etc. We have another one called Spam Assassin, which looks at controlling the level of spam that is coming into our network. Ethereal and MRTG looks at our bandwidth utilization within and across the wide area network. At the moment, we are also developing and trying to enforce corporate ICT policies. The challenges and experiences included that one needs to formally create a steering committee to oversee such a migration, because the competencies required to carry this through requires a team. It may not be possible to reside in one person. There's need to plan for resistance. You'll find some people resisting certain changes, so a bit of change management is required. There's need to have procurement procedures escalated, particularly within a public environment. And there's a need to have policies that the committee comes up with to be endorsed administratively. Because at a technical level, you might have a very good idea, but it won't fly until or unless the administrative people approve it. Our steering committee had the following competencies which we found useful. We needed people who are familiar with IP switching and routing, typically CCNA people. We needed people with skills in internet configuration of DNS, domain, SMTP, web, etc., which I think AFNOG was training the last week. Of course, we needed the local area network administrator. These are the people who are running your probably payroll. They needed to be in the team so that they're able to be up to date with what is happening. For example, in our case, we saw that the fella in charge of payroll was very worried about us changing our IP scheme from 123 to something else. I mean, he wasn't quite sure the impact it will have on the payroll. But by being a party to this team, we were able to explain away the fears. We needed somebody with structured cabling, okay? Someone who can organize the cables in the best practice manner. So I've got just a few diagrams that describe our network. For those who are techies, the first diagram is just the physical look at our campus network. We have the administration block, and it has buildings spread around a campus of about... I've never known the size, but it's a fairly big campus. For example, from the administration block, you could walk to one end close to 1.5 kilometers away. So most of these links are fiber going to the distant blocks. Once the fiber goes into a particular block, then we're having distribution switches that then branch out to access switches. But that wasn't the case before. This diagram shows the current state of affairs logically. What we have is a Cisco taking us to the internet, and the same router has some links to our two campuses. The internet link is 128K to the internet, and then you can see that we have moved our servers to be at the top there to enable equal access to all the users at the bottom, who are connecting via the access layers. So typically, the distribution switch will sit in buildings, in distant buildings, and they will be connected through fiber to the central building at the core. So we sat down and designed the IP scheme. Basically, we looked at the whole college, the headquarters, the city center campus, and another campus in Loreto, and tried to make them into one IP cloud so that they can share resources. You can see that we were very careful to say that VLAN 1 is going to have certain IP schemes, subnets as they call them, distinct from VLAN 2. So one serves the students, one serves the staff. Then we're interconnected internally and externally to the internet. The final diagram just shows the web services. From the internet, we have a subnet that connects to our web server, our main server, and the proxy server. So we have the Linux box that has two interfaces, one facing the world and the other one the inside. So all traffic is going via the Linux box, through what is known as NAT. And over the weekend, Randy Bush was very much against NAT. So that's something that probably we need to go back to the drawing books and find out what next. So this basically completes my presentation. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to take them. Yeah, Victor? Okay.
Okay, can we hold the questions for a few minutes? I think Dr. Epstein would like to leave. Thank you very much for helping. Okay.
Thank you. You wanted to know our bandwidth to the internet and number of users. We have a 128 link, K link to the internet, and at the headquarters we have 300 PCs on that particular link. Yeah, it's congested, but it's what we're having to deal with at the moment. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
Two questions. Why are you using 1918 address space, and why are you using single mode fiber rather than say multi mode over such short distances?
I didn't get your first question. Why are we using?
The address space that you're currently using, why are you not supporting AFRINIC and using real address
real
space?
IPs, okay. We're actually having, we got a subnet from our provider, JumboNet, who actually dictated the IP numbers we have. They gave us 8 IPs at the public interface. That's what we're using, and then that, of course, fosters to NAT from the inside. I'm aware that AFRINIC has a lot of IP addresses to give out, but this came out just this week, and it was amongst the discussions we're carrying out. How do we make use of such IP address space within our community? And definitely we look at how that can be done. However, I also have an issue in terms of, at the moment, our monitoring model is heavily tied around the NATing experience. For example, we monitor the traffic that the students are working with. We control spam from a central point. So when this came up yesterday, I was quickly asking myself, if we gave every student their own global IP, it requires a strategy on how to keep monitoring that traffic to make sure that you have that control you used to have under the NAT experience. As regards multi-mode or single mode, why are we using single mode instead of multi-mode? Basically, KCCT is a subsidiary of the National Telecommunication Company. And we actually didn't make a business decision on what to buy. We simply went to the parent company and asked them, what fiber do you have? And they're like, single mode. And we picked that and ran it through. Yeah. Thank you.
Round of applause for John, please. Now, as I invite the next presenter, I'd like, one of the things that we try to do at Afro Uganda, we always ask people to come back, is come back and share experiences. And the next presenter participated in last year's AFNOG, and he's gone back and come back and he's going to tell us about what he's doing. This again is to invite all of you participants and members of the community to encourage you to come back and share your experiences. James Yarahanga works for MTN Uganda Limited. He's a senior network engineer. He's a Cisco certified associate, Cisco certified internet professional. And he's going to talk to us about the WiMAX. While we wait for the non-open source OS to get itself in order, I had a question for, I think, the Kenyan community. Is JumboNet using AFRINIC addresses at the moment? John?
I think JumboNet, well, I can't speak for them, but I know their history is they got IPs from RIPE. And I'm not sure if they've changed to AFRINIC.
Next to the, following the last question, how many Kenyan ISPs do we have in the room? Different ISPs. I see some of my ISP Kenya down there. Do you have an AFRINIC block of IPs? Somebody else down here as well. So how many are still using non-AFRINIC addresses? Not responding. I think it's time to shame you so that next time you actually get the AFRINIC block. Free BSD should be going to you. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Any personal friends of Mr. Bill Gates, please send my complaints. I did not send it personally. My name is James Biaruhanga. I'm currently employed by MTN Uganda as a network engineer. I'm an AFNOG graduate as of last year. Some of my colleagues are seated in the audience. I'm also involved in some Cisco work and recently some wireless. Like Bud was asking about the address space being used by JumboNet, I'll also request to tell us involved maybe in the IEEE or WiMAX forum, because there are some bits of my presentation that focus on some of these organizations. So dive right in. Well, my presentation is about WiMAX and how we can use it as a technology for today and tomorrow, how we can deliver services in a rural African setting, how we can use services in the semi-urban African environment, and some of the, let's say, urban African environments. Well, basically, what is WiMAX? I looked for the best possible definition of this new wireless standard that everyone is excited about, and I figured this should do. For starters, WiMAX is a standard, and I think that it's important to highlight it as you define it, and it's a wireless technology, which is also important to highlight, and it has some key advantages over most of the wireless standards that we have been using, one being high throughput, and the other being the long distances that can be covered. So I defined it as a standards-based wireless technology that provides high throughput over long distances. Some acronyms that I will discuss, I will use in the presentation. WiMAX itself is an acronym, which is Worldwide Interoperability for Microwave Access. It's a certification mark for products that conform to this standard. And I'm not sure if we have any people in the room who are probably members of the IEEE. It would help if we knew them, so that at the back, so that we could maybe discuss after this and, you know, tell us a little bit more on how you came up with some of these things. we already saw you. And then we've got ETSI, which is the European Telecommunications Standards Institute. Members there, also feel free to share your experiences. Then High Performance Radio Metropolitan Area Network, and OFDMA, which the engineers in here can explain on how you can bounce waves from different surfaces and what kind of refraction and reflection and diffraction, and all those terms. Anyway, it's one of the technologies underlying the performance of WiMAX. So, what is this WiMAX Forum? First and foremost, they've got a URL, which is www.wimaxforum.org. The WiMAX Forum is basically a non-profit corporation, sort of like AVNOG, formed to promote and certify compatibility and interoperability of these WiMAX systems. Any system which in future or now is going to hold a WiMAX label, whether it's a laptop, whether it's a base station, whether it's a CPE unit, is supposed to be able to interoperate with any other that has the same. Currently, when you look at like your laptop and it has Wi-Fi, and you look at an access point and it has Wi-Fi, they should be able to talk to each other. This is the direction that WiMAX Forum is heading with the WiMAX systems. What does this mean for the vendors, the people who make the equipment? What does it mean for us, the consumers? What does it mean for the network operators? Everyone has something they're going to get as an advantage out of this WiMAX standardization. The network operators will have interoperability across. So this, of course, gives you a chance to specialize. If you want to maybe focus on CPEs, you specialize on CPEs and make them, maybe and help reduce on the cost customers. If you want to focus on base stations, you might need to take that direction. But basically, all you need to know is that your standard, the standard, as long as you conform to the standard, you'll be able to work with the other guys. For the end users, this means faster and cheaper access, and which is even more widely available. The component vendors also look at lower variations in the products. So almost everyone is getting something. I'll discuss a little bit more on the advantages shortly. I just pointed out a few members of the WiMAX Forum. This is all on the WiMAX Forum website. So there are some members who are categorized as board members. I believe these are the founding members. There are some principal members and some regular members. Almost everyone that is involved in IP communication right now is working with the WiMAX Forum. some key benefits of the WiMAX standard. For equipment vendors at common platforms, which encourages innovation. If you want your product to be slightly different and yet be on the same standard as someone else's product, you must be very innovative and look at what else you can give to your product to give it leverage. I mentioned something on specialization. There's no longer any need for any vendor to sit down and create an end-to-end sort of solution. He can focus on where he thinks he has the strongest resources, and then he will do that. For consumers, you have a number of players. You could find that some people are locked down by vendors because they have to rely on a specific vendor's equipment. If you're using maybe Motorola base stations, then you have to buy Motorola CPE. And when the guy, your supplier, your local supplier runs out of stock, then you have to sit down and wait for him. Yet you could actually get away from this kind of situation. The prices of most of this proprietary equipment usually are quite high. So you find that if you get standardization and you've got across the board, the pricing drops down. This is something that most of us, in especially the African setting, want to see happening. For service providers, penetration in the rural areas is always limited by CapEx. You find that you're thinking of how much money do I need to invest in base stations so as I can provide services in a remote area X or in even an urban area X. And you find that CapEx, which is capital expenditure, limits some of your investment power. There is that single vendor environment where you talk to one guy and he tells you, I'm using this, and you find it's, and he tells you it's very good, so you have to go there. Then you might not like the experience, and you're locked down there. This should eliminate it as well. The nature of wireless also helps reduce on, it helps deploy quicker. If you're thinking of going fiber, which is one of the media of transmission that most of the telcos go with, you're looking at digging meter by meter by meter. With wireless systems, you can cover an area. You, depending on if you're going with directional antennas or omnidirectional antennas, you can cover an area quite easily, you know, just placing the base station in the right convenient place. And for the component makers, they're looking at creating volumes.